I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Syria's government and the opposition are each blaming the other for the death of a French journalist yesterday. The journalist died in the city of Homs, where he was filming a pro-government rally. Today, the governor of Homs announced that he's ordered an investigation into the incident. But other authorities have already blamed what they call terrorists for the attack. Opposition activists say it's the government who staged the attack to tarnish the mostly peaceful pro-democracy movement. The CBC's Margaret Evans is in Damascus. She's just back from a visit to Homs.
We were only there for a few hours, and our movements were somewhat limited because we didn't have permission, and we'd joined up with a convoy of Arab League observers coming up from Damascus. That's how we got there. And then they didn't go out when we did get there. They met with Homs government officials instead, and it's a pretty complicated matter to move from government-controlled areas of the city to opposition areas. But we were there long enough to get a feel for the place and for the moods. It really felt like a ghost town. You'd go through residential neighborhoods, big apartment blocks. You knew people lived there, but there was no one out on the streets. You could feel a very heavy or see a Syrian army presence, army barricades up in front of the neighborhoods where some of the heaviest fighting has been. And of course, the mood was very tense, especially in the wake of the attack yesterday that left a French journalist and several Syrians dead.
Were you able to speak with any protesters or demonstrators?
No, we didn't get into the other side of the town at all. It's a little bit like a patchwork quilt. You have to navigate your way from one side to the other very carefully, and that takes a lot of planning. The government doesn't want you to go to the other side to see the opposition figures. The opposition figures want to make sure they trust you, and they're the ones who have to get you around the government barricades to get into the opposition areas. They're willing to do that. They want the foreign media in, but it takes a lot more planning than we had time to undertake today. The gunfire grows stronger as the sun starts to go down, and that's when some of the heaviest fighting takes place.
So you're back in Damascus now, Margaret, where nighttime protests have been taking place. Tell us about that.
That's right. That's in some Damascus neighborhoods and in several kind of suburbs, small towns on the outskirts of town. There's a sense that the protests in the countryside and up in places like Homs, although not to that degree in terms of the violence, are growing closer to the center of Damascus. Almost every night, there are protests in neighborhoods organized by local opposition groups, people opposed to Bashar al-Assad's regime. They go out in the dark because it's, of course, they feel safer for them in the daytime. They say that they are faced with army patrols. And this is happening again, night after night after night.
Well, Margaret, you've produced a report from Damascus. Let's hear it now.
Put barricades in order just to hinder the vehicles of the army, or, you understand?
Yeah. A nighttime drive through one of the towns on the outskirts of Damascus, a network of activists helping us reach one of the areas the Syrian government doesn't want us to visit. Neighborhoods like this one are playing host to anti-regime protests nearly every night, varying in numbers, but drawing closer to the heart of the capital. The demonstrators here know we're coming, and they have much to say.
Bashar al-Assad and his family, because they're killing us every day. Until when we will wait? The United Nations to go in Syria.
This young man wants outside intervention.
We are a people. We are not animals. We want to take our freedom. We want to a good life.
How old are you?
I am 17.
Please just keep with me. We have to move from here.
A guide is taking our small team to see the local organizers.
Okay, let's go.
Inside, bright lights, sweet tea, and a few neighborhood leaders who say they've given up their jobs for the cause. They also say the violence employed by the government over the past 10 months has hardened their position.
Not calling at first to overthrow the regime. We were calling for regulations and modernization. But now, it's not going to work for Bashar to stay in power.
But both sides seem to be lacking the upper hand here. Opponents unable to budge al-Assad and his inner circle, or to convince the international community to help them. And Syrian security forces unable to stop scenes like this one, raging in the dark.
Margaret Evans, in Damascus, we heard in that report of yours that people in the opposition want outside intervention in Syria. Are they really expecting that to happen?
I think that that the voices that you heard in that report, that 17-year-old boy, people like that are really desperate for change, and they don't understand why help might have been given to Libya and not to Syria. But in terms of the kind of the organizers, the intelligentsia, the, you know, the opposition figures, and that's a pretty fractured picture, I have to say, they do understand that it would be pretty difficult for that intervention to come. Those who had hoped for it or still calling for it understand that it's probably not going to happen. There's a sense, I think, that it's going to take them a lot longer than they expected. Bashar al-Assad's governing regime is digging in. We've seen that in the past week with these rare public appearances. No change in his policy, blaming it on outsiders. And we see it in the opposition as well. People have said to me, you know, we started out demanding change, the end of emergency rule, corruption, torturing, intimidation, detentions, but they say that the violence of the government crackdown on the opposition protests has been so great that it's hardened their position, hardened their hearts, hardened their determination to push on until Bashar al-Assad is forced to resign.
Margaret, finally, we heard a brief moment in your report where your guide was urging you to move along, move along. How safe are you finding it to report?
It depends on the circumstances. It really does. It's at that point, it's not even your own safety that you're worrying about. You're worrying about the safety of the people who are helping you reach these places that are so difficult to get to. You have to, I don't want to tell you too much about it because of the same concern, but you are basically leading, you're under observation yourself as a journalist here, and you have to kind of evade those minders to get out to those places, and you're worried. They all wear masks. They don't want their faces shown. We have no names. Very complicated methods of communication. You have to build trust on both sides to be able to get out to these places.
The CBC's Margaret Evans in Damascus. Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure.